Good morning, everyone. I'm going to adjust this a little. I think I'm taller than the last person. Good morning. My name is Eric Cave, and I work for the Pacific Northwest Conference. I'm really glad to be here and be among you today. I was here last March. Got to share, and that was a really fun time for me. And my wife and my son was here as well. You may remember if you were here, but I'm really glad to be here again. So my title is Director of Next Gen Ministries for the Pacific Northwest Conference. And in that capacity, I get to lead youth and children's ministry in our region, as well as supporting youth and children ministry leaders. And on top of that, young adults. And one of the things I get to do as well is be the director of our communications. And so we have a bunch of communications channels that I'd love to call your attention to. There should be a slide for it there. That we have a website, and if you want to go to our website, go to pacnwc.org. There you go. You can also search for PACNWC on pretty much any social media account and get in touch with what we do. We have a weekly newsletter called The Catch that I highly recommend that you subscribe to because it tells the story of our conference. It's one of the things I'm really proud of. I was really, really happy and impressed by Lydia and Ben as they shared this morning about Thunder. So thank you for that. I don't know if you've already done so, but let's give them a hand because they did a great job of sharing. I was there for Thunder as well, and it was a really great time. And if you're interested in seeing the recap video that we did at the end of Thunder, you really want to see what it was like, go to the website or to the, it's actually the best place to go would be go to YouTube and search for PAC NWC, and you can check it out. I'm here with my wife, Melanie. She is a speech pathologist in the David Douglas School District, and we don't have our kids with us, but I have a picture of them. You can put it up there if you like. I'll show off. There they are. So that's my family. That's us last summer at Haystack Rack, as you can see. There's me. The very tall one is my son, Duncan. He was here last year, and he lives in Corvallis, actually Philomath now, with his wife, Shelby, who's the short one in front. She just finished her time at Oregon State, and they are both just working and enjoying life. We have two grandcats that we got to babysit last week, and that was a lot of fun. My daughter is right there in the middle. Her name is Ella. She is a sophomore at Oregon State, an RA, and thriving, doing really well. And then you can see Melanie there in that picture, too. So when I was in high school, I loved my dad's motorcycle. There's a picture of me on my dad's motorcycle when I was in high school. And one of my very favorite things I loved to do was to take my dad's motorcycle and ride it along the irrigation ditches that were near our house. I grew up in Medford, and just outside of town, it was kind of in this semi-rural but also kind of country area. There's still a field across the house, street from my house when I was growing up that's now houses. But at that time, I could just ride this motorcycle all along there. And remember one day I was riding along, just having a blast. And as I was riding, I got distracted because it was a very bumpy section. I was looking down at my front wheel, and what happened is I ran into a rock. And when I hit that rock, I accidentally, gunned the throttle. And so I popped a wheelie in that moment and ended up going into the irrigation ditch with the motorcycle. Now, fortunately, it was dry. There was no water in there. But I landed in the irrigation ditch. I got up, and I was like, how am I going to get out of here? Because the irrigation ditch is like the walls are like this tall, right? And I remember before I left, my dad clearly told me not to go in the irrigation ditch. And I was like, oh, I can't ask for his help now. So how am I going to get out of this irrigation ditch? And so I got my bike up. I rode it up and down the irrigation ditch itself, trying to find the lowest point. And then I just use all my strength to literally just drag that motorcycle out of the ditch. And I finally got home, and I was so happy because I didn't have to tell my dad what had happened. Later, as I've learned to ride motorcycles more and more, I've discovered a principle to motorcycle riding, and that is that you will go where you're looking. You will go where you're looking. It's easy on a motorcycle or a bicycle to kind of get distracted about and look at right where you are right now. Look down at your wheels because you want to be careful. You're worried about running into something. But what I was taught over and over again as I was learning to ride is that what you want to do is look at your destination. Look at where you want to go, and your motorcycle will naturally go there. The key to a perfect ride is to turn your attention away from how far you've gone towards where you want to go. And I think the same thing is true with experiencing perfect love, the perfect love of the Father. As we are on a journey together in our faith, we want to experience perfect love. And it's really easy to make the mistake of using a ruler to try to determine how we're doing. We use a ruler to measure our relationship with God. And where we are, how far along we are on our journey is definitely important. I went on a journey with my love for motorcycles, right? When I was a kid, I would watch motorcycle videos. I would read motorcycle books and magazines. And eventually I took the next step by doing motorcycle things. When I became older, I would go to the motorcycle shop and I would look at them and I would learn more about them. And I eventually started to ride other people's motorcycles every chance that I got. And I grew further still when I got my own first motorcycle. However, just because I own a motorcycle or I ride a motorcycle doesn't necessarily mean that I love it any more than a person going to church or reading the Bible or doing what we would consider spiritual things. It means that they are in love with Jesus. Today I hope to help us all to discover perfect love. When I say I love my motorcycle, it means one thing differently today than it did when I was younger. When I say that I love my family, it means one thing today. It's different than when I was younger. But today I can own my motorcycle and I can love it because I feel like I have turned my orientation towards it. I grow in love with my wife as I turn my orientation towards her. So how far we are on the journey is important, but the direction we're going on the journey is what is most important. 1 John teaches us how to attain perfect love by turning towards Jesus. And that's what our message is going to be about today. Turning towards Jesus leads to perfect love. Now I'm going to unpack this by giving you three keys to understanding how to turn towards Jesus with perfect love. But I'm also going to have a little bit of fun. I hope you don't mind. I'm going to share some stories and some pictures of my motorcycle adventures as I've gone along. So the first key is that love of the world turns away. Love of the world turns us away. And this is me on a motorcycle when I was a baby. It's probably my first time to ride a motorcycle. It's not real. I'm not really riding. You can see there. You can see my dad's arm there holding up the motorcycle. But so love of the world squeezes out love of the Father. I'm going to read to you from the message this morning. If you have the message, you're welcome to turn there if you have brought one with you. Otherwise, the verse will be up on the screen, but I've got it here. So out of the message, 1 John chapter 2, verse 15 tells us this. Don't love the world's ways. Don't love the world's goods. Love of the world squeezes out love of the Father. Now, I chose the message because I love the phrase that the way it puts this here, that it says that love of the world squeezes out love of the Father. What does that mean? What does squeeze out mean? And the best illustration I could think of was the old children's lullaby that my wife and I used to sing to our kids called Roll Over. Does anybody know this song? It goes like this. There were 10 in the bed and the little one said, roll over. So you guys know it. So you roll over. So they all rolled over and one fell out, right? And then it goes on. There were 9 in the bed and the little one said, roll over. Okay, and then one fell out, and it goes and goes and goes, until finally it says there was one in the bed and the little one said, I'm lonely. That's a really good, lullaby to sing to your kids to teach them how to count backwards, I guess. But it also tells the value of, selfishness and leaving people out of the bed. But what I really like about this, and I think it illustrates things now, is this idea that there's so much room in the bed. And as you roll one direction, something's got to give way. And in our lives, as we entertain love of the world more and more, we're basically asking for the other parts of our lives, for our love of God, to roll over, and it rolls out of the bed. There's only so much room in our hearts. And I think we try to pretend that our bed is big enough to hold it all. We can love God, and we can love the world, right? And what we do, I think, is we get out the measuring tape, and we measure, okay, if there's 10 people in the bed, if as long as 5 or 6 of them represent love for God, so it's more than love for the world, I'm okay. But that's really not how our spiritual lives work. Our spiritual lives are all about what direction are we going? Are we rolling in the direction that's pushing out love of the Father by inviting love of the world in? Or are we rolling the other direction by being captured by God's love? Which I'll get to that in just a second. But first I want to entertain this idea of asking the question, what is love of the world? And this verse, I think, clearly tells us. It says, love of the world's ways and loving the world's goods is love of the world. I remember I said, love can mean a lot of things. And here it's talking about adoring, attaching ourselves to, being devoted to the world's way of doing things and its stuff. And the world's ways are pretty clear. Things like selfishness, hate, cheating, lying, and just trying to get more and more stuff instead of being content with what we have. And we think these things will help us or make our life better when actually they only make things worse. And just like the children's lullaby tells us, love of the world ultimately leads to isolation. First John 2 continues in verse 16 to say this, practically everything that goes on in the world, wanting your own way, wanting everything for yourself, wanting to appear important, has nothing to do with the Father. It just isolates you from Him. This is quite a list. Wanting our own way, wanting everything for ourselves, and appearing important. They're all examples of loving the world. And they push the Father away. They separate us from His love, leading to isolation. This is one of the biggest problems in the world today. We are more connected through social media and our phones than ever. Yet isolation and loneliness has reached what people have called an epidemic level. We are lonelier than ever. We are isolated from each other, and worst of all, we are isolated from God. And it leads to a world that is dark, lonely, and a painful place. Love of the world churns us away from love of the Father. Our second key, though, is the opposite of that. That love of the Father turns us toward. Love of the Father turns us toward. And there's a picture of me on my very first motorcycle that I ever owned myself. And I'll tell you a story about it in just a little bit. But first I want to read to you from 1 John chapter 3. So we're going to skip ahead to another chapter where he says this in verse 1. What marvelous love the Father has extended to us. Just look at it. We are called children of God. That's who we really are, but that's also why the world doesn't recognize us or take us seriously, because it has no idea who He is or what He's up to. So our second key is that love of the Father turns us towards, And to unpack that a little bit is this idea of marvelous love makes us children of God. Now, I love this verse because it uses the word marvelous. Marvelous is such a fun word. Say it with me. Marvelous. See, you're smiling. You can't help but, like, marvelous is like this infectious word, right? And that's a great description of God's love. And I also like how the NIV, it also uses the word lavished in this verse. And you guys put it right here on the cover of the bulletin this morning. And Kim did such a great job of highlighting it in the children's message. Thank you for doing that. Because I love these words, marvelous and lavished, because they, I think, express so well how big and amazing, beyond what's necessary, God's love is for us. And Kim, I'm actually mad at you because you stole my illustration this morning of the marvelous with your illustration of the peanut butter and jelly sandwich when it has so much jelly that just squirts everywhere, right? So much jelly that you can't even, it's way more than you need. It's lavished on there and it's marvelous. That's God's love for us. And it's perfectly illustrated in the fact that he makes us his children. And that's a really big deal. He has made us his children. He's given us his name. He's adopted us into his family with all of the privileges that that includes. This includes a new life, a start over. Our debts are canceled. It's very much like being born again. And what I learned from this is that who I am, my value, comes from something other than the sum of my good and bad. My value comes from something other than the tape measure that I tend to get out and hold up to my life to see how good I'm doing. In fact, what defines me and my value at the core doesn't come from me at all, but comes from He who loves me. From He who has made me His child. So where I'm on the line of a tape measure is getting closer to God. It is important, but what is more important is my orientation towards Him. Now, this is really hard because our world measures everything. Our world tells us that our value is determined by how well we measure up. But the idea that defines us is God's love for us does not make sense to the world. And it's not something that we do in ourselves. It's not a matter of my working hard enough for God to love me. His love for us is profound because of who He is, not because of who we are. And so it leads me to this next little part to unpack this idea that the love of the Father turns toward is that belonging leads to becoming. Belonging leads to becoming. Look at the second part of 1 John, verse 3:2. It says this, but friends, that's exactly who we are, children of God. And that's only the beginning. Who knows how we'll end up? What we know is that when Christ is openly revealed, we will see Him, and in seeing Him, become like Him. There's something about God's love for us that when we're able to see it, it actually draws us to Him. It actually draws us down the process of becoming like Him because we feel such an intense sense of belonging. Belonging leads to becoming. Now, I told you about that motorcycle that was my very first motorcycle I ever got. That was a Honda 175. Built in the year 1972. And I got it because a friend of mine at a former church that I used to work at, he had that motorcycle at his like vacation home at the beach. And they used it as a dirt bike, even though it had a license plate on it. And it was sitting in his shelf, not doing anything. And he heard that I liked motorcycles, and so he gave it to me. It was an awesome gift. I loved it so much. And I wanted to ride it on the street, but it didn't have any turn signals on it because they were just using it as a dirt bike. So this one day I got on the bike and I thought to myself, I'm going to go get some turn signals. And I live up in Portland in the Clackamas area near off of 205. And I remember seeing a Harley-Davidson shop up there. Maybe you've driven by it. It's the one with the giant American flag there in Gladstone. And so I hopped on my little motorcycle. I put my little helmet on, and I drove to the Harley-Davidson shop so I could get some turn signals. And as I pulled in, I was immediately intimidated because all I could see were these giant motorcycles with giant burly men on them with like tattoos and spikes and all this kind of stuff. And so I was like, okay, I'm a little intimidated by these guys. So I found a parking spot that was as farthest from the door that I could find. And I parked my motorcycle, I got off, put my helmet down, and walked inside. And what I quickly found out was that Harley-Davidson stores, they don't sell Honda parts. They only sell parts for Harley-Davidsons, right? So I was like, okay, that makes sense. So I learned a lesson. And I looked around a little bit, enjoyed myself, kind of checking out the store, and I left. But as I walked out the door, to my horror, I discovered that two Harley-Davidson motorcycles had parked right next to my Honda, and the riders were still sitting on them. And I looked closer, and I could see that that they didn't have sleeves on their jackets. And they had like tattoos everywhere, right? They were smoking these big old cigars. One of them even had a helmet that had like a spike sticking out the top. And I was so intimidated by these guys. And so I went back in the store and looked around some more because I was going to wait for them to leave, right? And I came out and they were still there. And I was like, I got to go. What am I going to do? And so I made a plan in my mind that I would go out there and I just wouldn't make eye contact. I'd get on my motorcycle, start up, and ride away as fast as I could and try to get out of there. Maybe, you know, I thought maybe they might turn and like tease me or say some insults to me. I don't know. They might be upset that I rode a Honda to a Harley-Davidson store. You know, they might try to pick a fight or something. I had no idea what to expect. I was really scared, but I just went out there and I put one leg over my motorcycle and I was just about to start it when I felt a hand slap my shoulder. And I was like, and he goes, "Is that a Honda 175? And I was like, "Yes, it is." And he said, "That was my first motorcycle." Ah, ha, 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 ha. And he just had this big laugh. And then we ended up having this great conversation where he told me all about that motorcycle and how much fun he had on it. And he even gave me some tips on where I could go to get the turn signals that I needed. That moment, I felt welcomed into the biker world. I felt like at that time I was a biker. And I wanted to be a biker more. It encouraged me, it propelled me down the road from my love for motorcycles. And it was all about belonging, feeling like I was part of a family, that I mattered to some other people. And look how this verse tells us how we become like Jesus, by looking at him. And we look at him because he has welcomed us into his family. He has made us his children. It is his job to ultimately transform us, to change us, and help us to grow to be like Jesus. And our job is to look at him, to be captured by his love as we turn our attention towards him. And I know this can be difficult to do, especially if we're feeling low or like we have done something wrong. If we feel like we have been turning our attention to the world too much, it can be difficult to look to Jesus because of our guilt and our shame. I think sometimes we feel like those dogs that we see on videos on the internet. Have you ever seen those where somebody comes home and there's a giant mess and they have two dogs, right? And one of them is like, "I'm glad you're home. Welcome back." And the other one is in the corner like this, like won't even make eye contact. It's obvious which one made the mess. And I think we oftentimes feel like that dog. We don't even want to make eye contact with Jesus because we're afraid of the punishment that's going to come. But that is a complete misunderstanding of the situation. Instead, Jesus can't wait for us to make eye contact with him so that he can put his arms around us and say, "I know it's hard. I know you made a mistake, but I'm here with you, and I'm going to help clean up this mess along with you." Because he draws us in with his love, and it's that love that helps us to become who he wants us to be. Because love of the Father turns us toward him. So the first key was that love of the world turns us away. Second key is that love of the Father turns us towards. And what I want to end with is this last key, that love of others turns us upside down. And that is a picture of me on my current motorcycle, which is a KLR 650, at an event called the Alley Sweeper, which I'll tell you about in just a moment. But first, let's turn the page again and look at 1 John chapter 4 as he continues to teach us about love. He says this in verse 11. My dear friends, if God loved us like this, we certainly ought to love each other. No one has seen God ever, but if we love one another, God dwells deeply in us, and his love becomes complete in us. Perfect love. Loving one another completes perfect love. This passage is telling us that God's love is made complete in us when we love one another. Some versions of the Bible say that God's love is made perfect in us. And that's why I like this person, this passage in the Message, because it says both complete and perfect are included here. And it makes me think of a circle. And I'd like you to, if you don't mind, do this with me. Hold up your hands and like make a circle, because a circle is often a symbol of perfection that is shown quite often. If you've been to a wedding or something, people often talk about the wedding ring as a perfect circle. And this circle, as far as our understanding perfect love, is in two parts. So one part is our love of the Father and his love for us. But this verse is telling us there's another part that's our loving one another. And they go together to make a perfect circle. If you only have love of the Father, all you've got is a C, right? Or an N, or if you want it this way, a U. But you don't have a perfect circle. If all you have is love of others, again, all you have is, what if I go all the other way? The D, almost a D. But when they're together, that you find perfect love. That love is complete in us. That we are able to actually fully live into God's perfect love for us. Now, most of the time, I like to ride my motorcycle on by myself. But I've found that it's much better when I ride with others. And one of the most fun experiences I've had on my motorcycle was this event called the Alley Sweeper. So this is a picture of that same event, but from a different direction. I'm in that crowd somewhere. If you squint really hard, you might see me, but I've actually looked long and hard and can't find myself. That's how many people were there. There were hundreds of people at this event, and we all gathered for the purpose of riding our motorcycles through the alleyways of Portland. And it was a blast. I had so much fun riding through these alleyways and just having a good day with other people. I went on the event with my nephew Josh. So we rode together and we had a great time. It was, what I discovered is that when I ride with other people, my joy of riding increases. I see that they're enjoying themselves, and I like tap into that joy. And the same thing, when they see that I'm having fun, they also realize that they're having fun. But I've also discovered it's much safer to ride with other people, because riding a motorcycle, as you know, can be dangerous. It might break down and you need somebody to help you to get it fixed and get it running again. You might end up in an accident and need some medical attention or somebody to help you a lot with that. Although I can ride alone, I found it isn't safe, and it's less enjoyable than when I'm with others. And here's the thing, is we are not designed to live out our life of faith alone. We're designed, actually, God made us to do it together. That's why this verse is here telling us to love one another. It is a great thing to develop our personal relationship with God. And it's great to come and sit in church with other people. But what God is calling us to actually live life together, to be on an adventure together with other people. And loving others is a pathway towards a deeper relationship with God. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's really difficult for me. This is like my growing edge, to be able to be in deep relationships with other people along the way of faith. And that's because, like I've said many times, my tendency is to pull out that measuring stick. And I measure myself, I start measuring other people, and that becomes a comparison, and that can get in the way. But what this verse is telling us is not to pull out our measuring stick with other people, but to love them. Just like we turn our attention towards God, as we turn towards God, that's how we discover perfect love. This passage is asking us to turn our attention towards other people with love. And this can happen in a lot of different ways, but unfortunately, statistics show that it doesn't happen very often with most Christians today. I was actually just this last weekend with a pastor, and he leads a ministry, so he travels around to churches. And over a 10-week period, he would go to churches and he would ask people to raise their hand if they felt like someone had ever come alongside and discipled them, like mentored them in their faith. And over a period of 10 weeks, he only had 5 people say yes. And I think that's indicative of where we are in our faith. We have a tendency to keep our faith very personal. We might come to church and talk about the weather or the Ducks game yesterday or those kind of things, but we very rarely ever enter into deep relationship. We very rarely ever ask someone, would you come alongside me and mentor me? Help me to grow as a disciple. We very rarely go to someone else and say, I think that that you would benefit from having a mentor in your life, and maybe I could serve in that capacity. We very rarely find like a small group of people where we're mutually mentoring each other. And that's because most Christians today give the responsibility for the growth of their faith to their lead pastor. They have abdicated their spiritual growth to the teaching they receive on a Sunday morning. And that is not what this passage is telling us about. This passage is telling us that we find perfect love when we truly enter into relationships with each other. And here we are. I know that Valley Covenant is in a unique spot in that you've gone through a long, sometimes challenging search for a lead pastor. You don't even have the option today of saying, we're going to just let our lead pastor be the one that disciples us. If for this church to thrive, it will thrive as it becomes a community based on this love. Whether or not, or whatever the timing will be for bringing in a new lead pastor, this is what God is calling us all to. It's tempting sometimes, just like I do, to pull out that ledger and even apply it to the church, that measuring tape, to pull it out and say, this church, because of its struggle to find a pastor or the time, whatever, has got this or that going for it, and start to make judgments based on that. But I want you to know that just as each of us are God's children, dearly loved, this church is dearly loved by God. He has his hand on you, he has his hand on us, and he is using you now in the community, and he will continue to use you to further his mission in the world. He holds your future in his hand. He's promised to be with you and make this his church his own in order to accomplish his mission in the world. When we love one another, it turns everything upside down, which is, I think, the perfect opportunity for God to work. Turning towards Jesus leads to perfect love. This is where we find true acceptance, meaning, and joy. It's where we will be free to be broken, to repent, and to love others fully. And it doesn't matter where we are along the journey, as long as we turn more and more towards Jesus to experience perfect love more deeply. I still remember the first time that I rode a motorcycle. My friend Jason Perry lived down the road, and he had moved out. I got to know him really well when he lived right down the road, but then he moved out to the country. And I went to visit his house for a weekend, and he had this little motorcycle that I call it like a putt-putt bike, but it's the kind like with a lawnmower engine. You guys know what I'm talking about? Like you literally pull start it like this and there's no suspension. It's a tiny little bike. And he was riding it around his property one day and I was watching him while I was visiting. And man, something in my heart was like, I really want to try that. But I was also really scared. And he'd pull up in front. I was like on the porch. He'd pull up and say, hey, Eric, you want to ride? And I was like, no, it's okay. And he'd go ride some more. And he did this like two or three times. And I kept saying no because I was afraid I would crash and get hurt. But I was also afraid because his sister, Dana, was there, who I happened to have a crush on. And I didn't want to make a fool of myself in front of her, right? But I kept watching him. And I thought, oh, man, I just looks so good. So finally he said, you want to do it? I said, yeah, I want to do it. So I went out there and he showed me that there's a clutch and a brake and here's how you go. Put the helmet on. Okay, go. And I rode to the end of his driveway and the first thing I did is I mixed up the clutch and the brake. And so I slammed on the brake on the front wheel and I crashed, right? Wiped out right there in front of him and in front of Dana. And they ran over and they helped me get up on the bike and I bent one of the foot pegs even and we straightened that out and he said, go ahead and give it another try. And I hopped on and then I went. And I never wanted to go back. It was such an amazing experience. I felt so free. I felt so fulfilled. I felt like, the wind in my hair in my face and the freedom that I experienced was just amazing. And I think that when we step out in boldness and experience God's love by turning away from the love of the world, by being captured by his love as we turn towards him, and really experiencing full and complete love when we love others, that we'll feel the same way. We'll enter into perfect love of the Father and we'll never want to go back. We may crash or look stupid along the way, but if we remember God's love for us, all we'll want to do is get up and ride. Let's pray. Thank you, God, for your word that you love us so much that we are captured by it. I ask that you would let that be true for each of our lives today and that we'd be drawn into loving you in return. And that would help us and empower us to turn away from the love of the world and to turn towards loving others as you've called us to. In your name, amen.